Hello, Poke fans. Welcome to the Same Type Attack Bonus Podcast, Stabcast for short, your twice-monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon. I'm your host, Trainer Spike, and with me, as always, are my fellow trainers, Slagkick.
Yes, that's right.
And Sulker.
Oh no, I dropped the lift key.
Today is August 12th, 2016, and this is Stab Podcast Episode 3, Team Building 101. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of our venture into the deeper world of Pokemon. This week, Trainer Slagkick will be leading a discussion on Video Game Team Building 101. But first, I'd like to talk a little bit about our weeks in Pokemon. Sulker, how about you? What is going on in your Poke week?
So this week has been a little slow for me as far as Pokemon goes. Get it?
Oh!
I see what you did there.
So I haven't been able to play a whole lot of Pokemon Go this week, which is unfortunate. However, I did spend a lucky egg and nearly hit level 24. I've clearly slowed down on my path to winning.
It still sounds pretty good to me.
Indeed. Also this week, I notably bought two new Pokemon card decks, the Volcanion deck and the Hoopa decks.
Ooh.
Nice.
I'm enjoying them a lot. I've already added one of those to my online TCG, so watch out for me, internet. I'm not really going to do much with that.
And that's something that we haven't really talked about a whole lot here on the show, but the Pokemon TCG actually has a really fantastic online implementation, both for iOS, Android, and even just like PC platforms. I assume that that's what you're talking about. You've been playing on there?
Oh yeah, 100%. I did have some issues with trying to even get my cards registered through them. It's not a thing that you can do with iOS at this point. So if you have an Apple iPad, because it isn't available for phones, you have to go through a PC or I believe they also have a Mac client, but you have to register through that before you can use it on your online iPad account.
I see. And how is it? How's the implementation and everything?
Oh, it's super fun. Like, it feels like you're actually sitting there playing a game with your friends. Sometimes it feels like the random draws aren't so random, but you get what you get with digital randomization.
Excellent. Well, I definitely think for people interested in the Pokemon card game out there, that's probably the easiest way to get into it in the modern day. See if, you know, you enjoy it or what have you. I believe there are a couple of free starter decks that you get in the online game that are like very basic. So because, you know, I've played it and that was my experience playing it, was with just the basic starter decks. So I highly recommend people check it out if you're interested, and I would expect to hear more about that product moving forward.
Oh yeah, definitely. The only other thing that happened this week in Pokemon for me, I did boot up Pokemon Blue for the first time since it was released on the 3DS.
Virtual console?
Yep, virtual console. The reason for this being that Trainer Dark Shifter and one of our other friends, Enzaponi, both are in need of Meowth and what was the other
That's
one?
That's right.
Sentrew?
No, because one of them has yellow. Magmar. I need to get everyone a Magmar.
Yeah.
So I'm starting that Pokemon journey.
Excellent. Well, we are looking forward to hearing more about the journey to Magmar in the coming weeks. Slaggy, how about you? What has your Poke Week looked like?
My Poke Week has also been a little bit slow. Haven't really loaded up PokeGo quite as much. I've been a little bit busier in my professional life this week, so unfortunately, not really any amazing finds, but you know, just every once in a while, like I caught a Rhydon, not a Rhydon, a Rhyhorn today. So, you know, still every once in a while catching some. Haven't had any notable, like, positive things happen with the new radar system, but I mean, it seems fine.
And that's actually a really good talking point that I think we should hit before we get into the rest of the episode proper. You know, we have segments for all of these different Pokemon platforms, but we don't really have a segment for Pokemon Go. Let's do that right now. You know, we are a show based out of the San Francisco Bay Area. This is, of course, one of the test areas for the new Pokemon Tracker in Pokemon Go. We have that really cool utilization of the nearby system. It includes, you know, photos of the Pokestops around you and tells you what Pokemon are spawning near those Pokestops. I think it's really cool. It's a really cool implementation. My Poke Week, I did go out and experiment with it a little bit because I wanted to be able to talk about it on the air. It's really interesting because I don't live in the city proper. So when I'm not in city limits and I'm a little outside of it, I actually don't have access to that. And now I miss it, and it has actually encouraged me to play less when I'm at, like, home or what have you. Sulker, have you used this new implementation yet?
I have not, actually, because I haven't really gone into the city proper, with the exception of one night a week where I do go and buy comic books, but I'm mostly focused on getting comic books and company and eating some food stuffs before going on to my other sundry geeky things. But I hope to maybe get some time exploring it this weekend. I know that we have plans to do some basic Poke hunting maybe tomorrow, or at least that's my plan now.
Yes.
Well, I did specifically want to go to the beach to try to get some water Pokemon, so just saying.
You're mine, Gyarados.
Have fun catching like 400 Magikarp.
Some of us have already made a lot of headway there, so good luck.
Thanks
to
for
you.
Rubbing it in.
It's 400 Magikarp candy. Get it right. That's only 100 Magikarp.
That was super adult of you. I just want to say, Spike.
Thanks, I try. So, all right, well, that about wraps it up for our Poke Weeks. So I'd like to move on to our Muse. That is, our Poke News.
Mew.
Sulker, I believe you have the first news piece here. You want to kick it off?
Yes. This week, Kotaku reported that after 9 years of work, fans released their own Pokemon game. This is Pokemon Uranium, as it is released by the Uranium team. This is one fan-made game that has been in development. It does feature over 150 new Pokemon, most of which are customized by the team at Uranium.
Every time you say Uranium, I expect you to say Uranus.
I mean, I'm thinking it.
Don't you know my ass is famous?
This is a Pokemon podcast. You clean that filthy mouth up,
He's
fucker.
Just talking about Gaga. Come on.
I'm like, we use the explicit tag on iTunes. It's okay.
Oh, well, shit, fuck, damn.
All right, carry on.
So 150 new Pokemon, including a new type of Pokemon, Nuclear.
Nuclear.
So this form of the game is only available on PC, as it's an EXE file only.
As I understand it, it was actually developed in RPG Maker.
That's cool.
I had not known that, so thank you for that, because, wow, it looks gorgeous. There's a trailer online. You can see it by going to Kotaku, or you can go over to YouTube and search Pokemon Uranium.
And of course, we will be linking you on our website over at stabcast.org.
Stabcast.org?
You know, this is really surprising because Nintendo and then particularly Pokemon Company are super litigious. I mean, not to jinx it. Jinx. But, you know, like, didn't Nintendo just take down a Metroid fan game for, like, the Metroid's anniversary or something?
Well, the important thing to remember about that is that Metroid fan game, another Metroid 2 remake, was in development very publicly for like 7 years, and Nintendo waited until the fan game was out there and on the internet to then enforce their copyright. And so the thing to really keep in mind is that we do typically see these situations where Nintendo, Pokemon Company, if you're not making money or profit on this, they'll typically at least let you release it and get it out there before they make you take it down, presumably to protect their copyright and to keep the trademark contested, because if you ignore these kinds of things, it can in the long term put your trademark in jeopardy. But to answer your question, I'm not surprised that they let it get finished and released. I do wonder how long it's going to be available for download easily, so
yeah.
If you're interested in checking this out, you should probably do so sooner rather than later.
This just reminds go ahead.
I was just gonna say, my PC is right over here in this room, so bye guys, I'm gonna go do that.
I was gonna say, this just reminds me of, like, oh god, like 15 years ago at this point, probably around that time, one of my Poke friends online, who, like, I've lost contact with long since, but we were developing, at that time it was the Platinum version, before Platinum was even a thing, and so that just takes me back to making up Pokemon, and we had the Solar type, which was going to be like counter to the Dark type or something. I don't know,
man, if only they could come out with a game that focused on, like, the light of the sun and maybe, like, the light from the moon and, like, how they interplay, and, like, maybe make a game about that.
Maybe one of the legendary Pokemon can be the beast that devours the sun.
All right, well, I'm giving you guys a lot of leeway to be silly tonight, but Slaggy, I think you have another news piece.
Yeah, and this is one that I wanted to talk about because it ends up being a feel-good story, you know. Speaking of Pokemon Go, and, you know, there's so many news out there about, like,
Homeboy in San Francisco got shot the other day.
Yeah, like, so there's just a lot of negative sentiment about like, oh, you know, don't trespass, blah, blah, blah. But this ended up being a really heartwarming story coming out of Tempe, Arizona. So in the Phoenix area, it starts out a little bit sad. There was a...
As most things in Arizona do.
Yeah.
I can confirm that.
So it starts out a little sad because there was a woman playing Pokemon Go with her son, who's a teenage boy with autism, and some college-aged guys came in, bullied him, and like squirted barbecue sauce on him, which is like, why would you even do that? And so this young man's sister posted to her local Pokemon Go Facebook community, it being like, hey, you know, this is what happened, you know, like, watch out for them. And so what happened is that like a bunch of people showed up to play Pokemon Go with this guy, this young man, at a local park, and like they, some people brought him like stuffed Pikachus and other little Poke gifts, and I just thought that that was really a touching example of like the Pokemon community coming together in a positive way. So
oh yeah, that's 100% uplifting. Like the way that this game can like hit both positives and negatives, highlighting the greatest peaks of humanity while also showing us the lowest lows. Seeing something like this just fills me with warmth and makes me a little bit happier to be part of the human race.
Well, you really see who's the Ash Ketchums and who's the Team Rockets.
Well, and something that needs to be said about a lot of the negative sentiment, a lot of these negative stories about Pokemon Go, is that more often than not, all of the facts, and you know, I think in particular back to this story of this guy getting shot in San Francisco while playing the other day, that doesn't appear to have been motivated by the game in any way. You know, it's really unfortunate, but you know, there was no theft, there was no like violence other than the shooting. By all means, this appears to be something that could have happened completely without Pokemon Go.
Yeah,
so
I am
as a result way more interested in these positive stories.
Hashtag because, just San Francisco things.
Well, exactly. And so, you know, to me, I see way more value in these positive stories because these are things that would not have happened without Pokemon Go. Whereas, again, unfortunately, people get shot in San Francisco like every day.
Yeah. And I just have to say, like, I could not help but have my bitter cold heart warmed when I saw the picture of this this young man getting a big plush Pikachu. Like, I mean, that's just like, it's just so cute. So, Spike, I hear that you've got some pretty big news for us.
Yeah, we got another trailer for Pokemon Sun and Moon, as well as a series of updates to the official Sun and Moon website that has given us images of new Pokemon, new
yes.
Alola forms, as well as our first proper official reveal of Team Skull.
Yes!
They are going to be the villain team of Sun and Moon, as you likely got from their name. But before that, we want to talk about the new Pokemon. And by that, I mean the new old Pokemon. We are looking at new Alola forms of Meowth, Raichu, and Marowak. Now, this is really exciting. You know, these new forms have new types, which is really exciting. Alolan Meowth, for example, aside from just being like a darker colored, sassy gay Meowth, which is basically everything I've ever wanted in my life.
A sassier, gayer Meowth, you mean?
100%.
He is psychic and dark type.
Oh, I thought he was only dark type.
The trailer I saw had listed him as psychic and dark.
Oh, maybe my eyes are going.
Yeah, I thought he was just dark.
Oh my god, maybe that's my misunderstanding. Well, I'm gonna rewatch the trailer to confirm that. But in the meantime, as long as he is at least dark, I'm really excited because you'll be able to get that same type attack bonus with him using Bite, and that's one of my favorite abilities.
What's the same type of attack bonus? It's not like as if we have a show called
you
that.
You can stop. Stop.
Stop. And you're right. It was my misremembering. My notes here are bad in this case. Alola form Meowth is only dark, not dark and psychic. However, he is still sassy as hell.
Oh, a dark, sassy queen. I'm all about it.
We also have Alolan Raichu coming along. He is electric and psychic. He has the ability Surge Surfer, which means that his speed will be doubled on electric terrain.
Yeah.
He looks super cute. He's kind of tubby. He he's darker color palette.
Isn't Raichu always kind of tubby?
And he's surfing on his tail, which is adorable.
You know, I really hope that there's some kind of link to maybe some other surfing Pokemon of an electric variety that maybe this one evolves from. That, you know, I want surfing Pikachu back.
Do you want the surfing Pikachu minigame?
I mean, who doesn't? But dude, how cool would it be if you could get surfing Pikachu and then he becomes Alolan Raichu when you evolve him, because he's like surfing and getting so much sun that he becomes like, you know, like a Bengal gal or something.
Okay. As long as Professor Kukui is the one who like surfs with him.
All right. Sounds fair. You're thirsty.
Always.
The Alolan Marowak is fire and ghost.
Yes.
He looks so cool. He has like very dark color skin, and his bone weapon is on fire at both ends.
It's like a fire dancer.
Yeah, right? Looks so cool.
Oh, it's serving Hawaiian realness.
Yes.
Alolan realness.
We also got the announcements of new 7th generation Pokemon, including Wishiwashi, both in solo form and school form. So he will apparently be having multiple forms that will have different abilities and different strengths. He's going to be a water type. He's like a cute little fishy, obviously. We also have Pukumuku, who is also a water type.
What was that?
He's like a weird, like, sea urchin.
Pukumuku.
Listed as the sea cucumber Pokemon.
Excellent. His new ability is Innards Out, and when this Pokemon faints, it will be able to deal one last bit of damage to its opponent equal to the amount of HP it had left before it received that fatal blow.
What I'm interested to hear is, will it be considered a win for that Pokemon? So if you're like down to your last and Pukumuku, if Pukumuku faints and then knocks out the other Pokemon, who wins?
I think that's a great question, and I think this is a Pokemon that, assuming its stats are competitive, I think we're going to end up seeing that question get asked in tournament play, because that ability sounds like a real game changer in some situations.
It could work out like Explode, I guess, so we can look into that and see how that plays out.
All right, we also have, last but not least tonight, Morlul, and this one is a grass and fairy type. It looks kind of like, I mean, you know, they say grass and fairy. I was expecting grass and ghost based on the way it looks. He looks like cute but spooky in a very like Miyazaki kind of way. He has like some really cute cartoony mushrooms growing out of his head. Either way, I'm feeling it. I'm interested in learning more about him.
Oh, I'm here for these magic mushrooms, dear.
Oh, I bet you are. We also, of course, have the ruffians of Team Skull. That is their boss, Guzma, his admin, Plumeria, and several of their grunts.
Okay, with the grunts, I'm just going to say that the female grunt trainer is everything. Her little, like, ripped up shorts.
Short shorts.
Oh, ripped up short shorts, okay. And, like, everything about her aesthetic is perfect.
Yeah, I'm a really big fan of Team Skull's aesthetic. They have a little bit of, like, hip-hop swag, too.
Yeah,
if
right?
You saw the way that they're, like, posing and stuff in the trailer.
They're, like, Hawaiian hip-hop pirates, and that's kind of my jam.
Isn't that basically One Piece?
Basically.
I kind of hope that, like, Guzma is, like, tries too hard to be cool and, like, says really, like, inappropriately, like, non-hip things to, like, your Pokemon trainer or, like, other characters in the game.
Hey, fellow kids.
Oh, Hillary, well, what are you doing here?
He and Kukui have some sort of past, so I choose to believe that it might be some type of romantic past.
All right, I'm hitting the pause button on that. Why don't you take the next news story, Slaggy?
All right, so this news is in regards to the upcoming 2016 Pokemon World Championships, which will be the upcoming weekend of the 19th.
Excellent.
Where is it going to be held?
In San Francisco. The thing is that in the past, you know, these championships have been open to the general public, but due to limited venue capacity and overwhelming demand, according to the official site, the 2016 Pokemon World Championships will be closed to the general public in the interest of providing the best possible event experience to our qualified players and their families.
You know, I'm happy they're doing this to the degree that, like, obviously I want everyone who is, you know, competing and playing to be safe. I want them all to feel comfortable and be able to focus on the game. But at the same time, I'm bummed about this. As soon as I heard it was happening, I was really excited, since it's local, that, you know, we'd be able to go represent the show there, check it out, report back to y'all out there in Internet Radio Land.
Well, I guess we're going to have
bit gutted. Like, we won't be able to do that, though they are going to be live streaming it still.
I was like, I thought this was my news.
But the other big piece here, the other big question here, is that there was supposed to be a promotional plush Pikachu that they were going to be selling at this event only. And it was a San Francisco Pikachu, you know, a plushie.
Oh, was it the one like
that was holding a trolley car?
Yeah, because there's a really cute promotional art of Pikachu on a trolley with Jigglypuff, Bellsprout, and Eevee, and then there's a Snorlax on it. It's really cute. You'll see when you click the link over at Stabcast.org.
Stabcast.org.
Sulker, did you have something to say about this piece?
I'm really disappointed that I won't be able to go to this thing, specifically for the Pikachu, because I'm kind of a crazy person when it comes to finding new and cute Pokemon plushies. But yeah, I think that it's cool that they're trying to like keep it pandemonium level wise down, and that's great. I feel like that's good for the competitors, but the whole thing about Pokemon is it's like you're supposed to be having cheering fans going on and on about how awesome you and your Pokemon are, but if you can't go to the event where you're supposed to be cheering, how do you do that?
Yeah, so we'll have to see how this change affects the, you know, kind of the atmosphere of the championships, but I'm you know, still hoping you know, that all of the people who are partaking in this championship are, you know, going to have a good time.
Excellent. We also have word here that the next Pokemon movie, this is going to be called Pokemon the Movie, Volcanion and the Mechanical Marvel, will be releasing in North America and Europe in English later this year. This movie stars Volcanion and Magnaera, which I cannot possibly pronounce that thing's name right yet. I just haven't gotten it. It was originally released in Japan on July 16th, 2016.
Yeah, they're getting really quick turnaround with those movies. I mean, I guess since a while now, but based on like the olden days.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the big takeaway here, though, is that we will be getting it later this year. You know, this is part of why the Pokemon trading card game recently had the Steam Siege expansion. It ties into these Pokemon. Of course, we're going to have the distribution event for Volcanion later this year. October or November, I think they had said.
October, I believe.
October, okay.
All I'm going to say about this is it looks like fire.
Yeah, there is a really cool trailer for this. We will link you, of course, over on stabcast.org. I highly recommend you go check it out.
There's some moments that were very Attack on Titan to me.
I mean, we're basing that on there being a giant wall, period.
Yeah, but I mean...
So far as I could tell, nobody was getting eaten by Pokemon, but I'm not going to throw that out the window. I'd be there to watch it.
Oh, me too.
Excellent. All right, Sulker, I believe we have one more news story before we get to our discussion. You want to take that?
We sure do. So, Nintendo Wire reports that Pokemon Go partnership boosts McDonald's Japan's profits. So previously, it looks like McDonald's Japan was struggling a little bit. However, they have reported that there has been a 27% jump in profits since the company's collaboration with the app began last month. It looks like they actually closed about 100 of their restaurants over last couple of years. But once the Pokestops and gyms started popping up near franchise locations, the company was seeing marked increases in their profit margins almost immediately.
So,
ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving it. I'm gonna go over to McDonald's. What are we calling this place?
Poke-Donald's?
And get some Gilroy garlic fries and just catch them all.
Yes.
I'm like, I think the Gilroy garlic fries are only here in the Bay Area. I don't think Japan has them.
Rude to Japan,
TBH. But you know, I mean, I'm not surprised by this news of it boosting, because I know that you've talked about, Spike, about how like Monster Hunter cafes and stuff tend to be really popular, or at least have been in the past. So
yeah, these kinds of social gaming events in Japan, you know, they're treated very differently than they are here. It's very frequent when we see these big, especially, you know, portable games that have real social communities. It's very common to see these types of businesses thrive when there is a new game like that going on. So I'm not surprised to hear that Pokemon Go is having this impact.
The rest of the world is just catching up now.
You know, this is my news story, and I just want to go back to Gilroy garlic fries for a second, because I feel like Japan already has Pokemon centers, and I don't have one here, so I feel like this is my consolation prize.
There's kind of one in New York.
This is my consolation.
Okay, we'll get some garlic fries on the way to our Pokehunt tomorrow.
All right, well, in the meantime, Slaggy, why don't you start this discussion? I know that you're really passionate about this topic we're going to talk about today. That's why we picked you to go. Why don't you take it away?
Yeah, so I want to spend a little bit of time today talking about how to start looking at team building in the mainline Pokemon games. Now, I mean, I just want to start off with a disclaimer and then just kind of a general, general statement. Like, disclaimer is that, you know, I'm not involved in the competitive battling scene. I'm not at the Pokemon World Championship. There are people who metagame the whole team building scene, take it like really seriously, like way more than I ever have invested in it. So what I'm going to be talking about today is mostly just from like what I've researched over the years when I've been looking to kind of improve my strategies, battling with friends, or just, you know, having a good team makeup in the game. That being said, this is not necessary at all to enjoy the Pokemon games. One of the things that's great about the Pokemon games is that there is a really deep level of metagame. You know, we talked about the EVs and IVs last week, but I mean, these things aren't necessary to enjoy the games. But, you know, if you're someone who's dabbled a little bit with the games, or maybe you're just looking to try them now and you're kind of intrigued by what you've heard on here about the level of depth that the game can have in terms of strategy, that's kind of what we're hoping to get you involved in first. So I think the first thing that you really want to look at when you're trying to build a team is types. So, I mean, you could just collect the ones you think are cute, or, you know.
I mean, that's how I find out what my type is.
Ooh. So, one of the things about Pokemon that's, you know, makes it so fun is that it's kind of like a rock, paper, scissors sort of, you know, battle system. And, you know, it's actually much more than three. So, you know, the type matchups are definitely something you want to take into consideration, because there are, you know, types are strong against certain types. They're weak to other types. Some are immune to other types. So if you're looking to, you know, kind of have a good mix of types, fire, grass, and water are pretty good places to start. You know, these are the starter Pokemon types since Generation 1, and for good reason. They have a pretty good range of types that they're effective against, and, you know, you can find some pretty decent Pokemon. The starters are always pretty great. Ground and Rock are usually pretty good sturdy types. They're good to have on a team, and some of the types that are a little bit more rare, like Dark, Dragon, Ghost, Fairy, and Steel, these ones can be popular because they have a lot of resistances, typically, and, you know, of course, this will change when you have Pokemon with two types. And historically, Electric and Psychic have been very popular, but I mean, there's really ways to make strategies work for any mix of types, even if there's one with like four times weakness to ice or whatever, you know. So this is definitely something you want to consider. You know, you have six Pokemon slots, so you want to kind of be economical with your typings.
Just gonna say, you probably want to avoid like Steel Bug, because four times weakness to fire is not a good thing.
Right, unless you're like, unless you specifically have some sort of strategy that you would use that Steel Bug Pokemon for. So a little bit more on that later, but definitely I agree. I try to look for type combinations. I like dual type Pokemon, so, you know, something like grass and ground, like a Torterra, you know. So I try to look for types that are gonna have a pretty good mix of resistances. That means that, you know, there aren't a lot of move types that are gonna be like four times super effective. So that's definitely something to consider, because, you know, this is when you're sending your Pokemon out into battle, you know, if it's one that's going to be really weak to a lot of different types, then, you know, that's going to really play into the strategy. So, I mean, just looking at, you know, the type matchups and like looking at, you know, what your team is resistant to or where your team's weaknesses are, that's just like one level in itself. So, you know, if you're just starting out, that's definitely, I feel, the best place to look at.
Excellent.
And then I would say that, you know, the next thing you want to look at is kind of ties into what Sulker was talking about last week. And so when you're looking at Pokemon, they have base stats. So this information is available on any of the bigger Pokemon sites, Bulbapedia, Therapy, and like some of the ones I'll be talking about at the end of the discussion today. So like base stats are just kind of like the average overall stats, so that when you can compare like one Pokemon to another, this of course is going to be affected by nature's EV, IV training, and that sort of thing. I mean, there's definitely, you know, legendaries and mythical Pokemon tend to have a lot higher base stats than other Pokemon. And of course, you have low, like ones that are not in their final evolution form in their chain are not going to have as strong of stats typically. But I mean, that's not always, you know, set in stone. There's sometimes where like, oh, this Pokemon evolved and it got slower, or, you know. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of, especially these days, you know, different forms that, like, you know, change around the stats. But you know, if you're looking to be a little more competitive, you're definitely going to want to look at, you know, what the base stats are, and kind of like that'll kind of help you, I think, really look at like what your Pokemon might be good at. You know, are you going to want to focus on like having like really good defense if it's got a good defense stat? And the community is really kind of coming. The community is really over the past 20 years, you know, as part of the metagame, kind of identified these different roles that are good for, you know, certain Pokemon with certain kind of stat balances. So I'm actually going to get to that in a minute. But tying into the types and their stats, you want to look into their move stats, or like what, you know, what moves they're going to learn, or what moves they're able to learn naturally. Can they learn things from a TM or an HM? Can they move some, like learn something from the move tutor or from breeding through egg moves? So, you know, definitely when you're looking at different types of moves, which will tie into like different roles they have in battle. And
correct me if I'm wrong, you were telling me off air the other day that you're planning on getting into egg breeding for moves moving forward this generation. Is that my understanding, correct?
I mean, I've done a little bit of egg breeding. Like, I did it a lot more back in Gold, Silver, Crystal, but I mean, not really to be competitive, just be like, oh, I really want this Pokemon to have this move. But
And what kind of work does that take in a nutshell? Because, you know, I do want to keep this moving.
As far as the egg move, you really just, like, Pokemon, I'm sure we'll have a discussion about Pokemon breeding more in depth, but, you know, Pokemon have
sort of laying the seeds for that right now is my point.
Pokemon have different egg groups, so that, you know, so basically you just want to partner it with a Pokemon that will have the move that you're looking for. And so, I mean, getting an egg move is not too tricky. You know, hatching the right egg to have, like, the right nature and the right EVs, the right IVs, you know, that's the kind of the more time investment for eggs.
Slankick, correct me if I'm wrong, because I've not done a whole lot with egg moves. Is there any issues, like, when it comes to Pokemon from previous generations that might have had egg moves, like, say, in Gen 4, but don't in Gen 5? How do you deal with that?
You know, I've never really looked at egg moves across generations. That's a good question. That's something I'll have to research when we talk more about breeding.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
Excellent. All right. I'm sorry I didn't, you know, sorry to interrupt you. We're just wrapping up the
moveset. I think, the reason why you want to look at what movesets are available is that you might have two Pokemon that are, like, the same types, but, like, one Pokemon, and they might even be, like, similar stat-wise, but one Pokemon might learn a lot better moves. And I say better, it's very subjective. And, you know, when we're talking about this level of metagame, this is very much fan-driven. You know, and there's a lot of debate ongoing, and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, Pokemon come into favor and fall out of favor and stuff. So it's, you know, it's definitely an ongoing evolving thing. Evolving, LOL. So, like, one of the ways to start really looking at, you know, team building in a deeper way is to look at different types of battle roles that different Pokemon can fill. And you can almost think of these, like, similar to a JRPG class system or job system. And, I mean, that's not the best comparison, but, you know, based on what Pokemon stats are and what moves they learn, they have different roles that they can serve really well. So,
well, I think that's a really good framework for people to think about it,
because
you
these
know.
Are JRPGs. So and, you know, to kind of preface this, you know, when you have Pokemon moves, there's offensive moves, which are, you know, like your flamethrowers, water guns, thunder shocks, you know, the general attacks. There's defensive moves, which, you know, might raise your stats. There's ones that will lower other stats of your enemy Pokemon. There's status changing ones that will burn or paralyze. So, like, these different types of moves, like, have different have different niches, these depending on where what you're kind of gearing your Pokemon up to do. So one type of Pokemon that is really popular is called a sweeper. So
wait, sweeper? Did I fall asleep and, like, we're in the future and they released a broom Pokemon?
I wouldn't be surprised if there was a broom. A broom Pokemon would have to be like a ghost, like a witch's ghost, but anyways. Ooh. Sweeper. So sweepers are not brooms yet, but sweeper refers to a Pokemon that has, like, a high attack stat or a special attack stat. And so typically these Pokemons are going to have moves that are either physical or special attack, respectively, whether they're a physical sweeper or a special sweeper. And so the interesting thing about this, if you've been following the games for, you know, the past 20 years, or, you know, at least got on board a little bit earlier, in the earliest generations, there were certain types, like fire, water, water, psychic that were special only, and then like fighting, rock, ground were attack only. So, you know, if you had a rock type, you'd want it to have a high attack. If you had a psychic type, you wanted to have a high special. I want to say around, might have been generation 3, I might be wrong about that, but a little bit down the road, they changed that so that different moves have physical or special. So you could have a fire move that's like fire punch, and that's a physical move, but flamethrower is a special fire move. So that means you can have a Pokemon that is a fire type with a high attack stat, and you want it to have, you know, like physical fire moves. And so, you know, these are really good to help you deal with situations when, you know, you can take advantage of their stab, their same type attack bonus. And if you're bringing in a sweeper, you know, you're kind of wanting it to deal high damage and, you know, knock out your opponent's Pokés. So having a good speed stat, maybe not, you know, your, the number one stat, but a good speed is good for a sweeper. And
so what are some examples of Pokemon?
I was just going to get to that. So, you know, and like I said, these are up to debate in the community, but ones that I've seen really popular, just kind of as I've looked in the communities, Scizor is a really popular physical sweeper. Gengar seems to be a pretty popular special sweeper. And then Lucario, who has pretty good balanced stats, is a mixed sweeper who, you know, can bring some good high attacks, attack stat and a special attack stat. So
Ninja Dog for life.
And I mean, there's like I said, this is something that is endlessly debated. And so, I mean, because I bet someone would be like, no, Slicer is crap or whatever. So, you know, but I've just, in my experience, that I've seen mentioned a lot.
So if sweepers are like an MMO DPS, what do you have in the role of like a tank?
So there actually are, tanks are like a type of Pokemon role, but there's like a lot of overlap, but typically what you see referred to a lot are walls. So,
having the sex with the bees and the eagles.
And we're not talking about walls like in the Attack of Titan. But walls are Pokemon with high defense or special defense because they, you know, split that stat up. And you also would want this Pokemon to have high hit points. So, and the idea of a wall is just to kind of soak up damage and get your opponent Pokemon kind of like worn out and like using their moves all up. So you could use things like healing moves, different status effects, put out a substitute, and like, you know, you can do things to like help heal your team that's on the bench. Skarmory is a really popular wall. Like Skarmory has really good defense, and Blissey and Snorlax are both have really high health. You know, I mean, if you've ever fought a Snorlax and then it's like goes to sleep and rests and it's like, oh really? You know, like, so that's just kind of the idea, is that, you know, you're spending a lot of time kind of like wearing them down so that, you know, then you can finish off with something like a sweeper.
One of the most frustrating walls I've ever seen is a Chansey with an Eviolite, and I think we have feedback about that, but
yes. And the Eviolite, I've never actually used it, but it does something to your stats when you, for a Pokemon who's not in its final evolved form, right?
Yeah, correct.
And I think it's the defense and special defense, if I remember right. So there are sweepers and walls, and then another important role for Pokemon teams are leads. And so that's going to be the first one you send out in battle. And what you want to do with a lead is kind of like set up the stage, so to speak. So you might throw out moves like Stealth Rock or Taunt. You could use weather effects like Sunny Day, which powers up fire types, Rain Dance, that sets up, you know, like strengths for water type. And for those who aren't familiar with what Stealth Rock is, so what that does is it doesn't do any damage initially, but when Pokemon switch in, they will receive damage. So there's other similar types of moves to Stealth Rock, but Stealth Rock is just a really popular one. So you'll see that a lot on move sets for different leads.
Nice.
And Taunt. So Taunt makes it so that you're not able to use any status moves. So that can really, you know, if someone had really like plan on using a status move, then this could really mess up their strategy. So it's another popular type. So
that's great.
And I mean, there's all different types of ways to lead. It just kind of depends on how you want to, like I said, set the stage. Like you might want to be like a certain gym leader we're going to talk about later who makes the entire stage ice. Some of the leads that tend to be popular are Azelf, Metagross, and Aerodactyl. So those are ones that I see pop up a lot on forum discussions, and people are like, I need a good lead. You know, like these are ones that I've seen pop up a lot.
I'm sorry, that sentence sounded like something you would hear in like an old time old-timey movie. I need a good lead, see?
I got a good lead. So the next type of Pokemon battle role that I'm going to talk about are one of my favorites. And these are, I've seen them referred to in different ways. They're called cripplers and annoyers. Sometimes there's kind of two distinct things, but they kind of do the same basic thing. The idea is that you use status changing effect typically to kind of like get the Pokemon messed up, and then you'll switch in, use a sweeper to like do some heavy damage. So cripplers typically are ones that'll do things like poison, which toxic is always been one of the best moves to poison, and does really bad poison damage, like bad in for the Pokemon, but good for you. Paralysis, like Thunder Wave, Confusion, Confuse Ray is a good one. Burn, I typically like to use Will-O-Wisp, which is one that Ghost Pokemon have a lot. And I know like this was one of the first times back in like Gold Silver when like the metagaming was really kind of starting. You'd hear about like, oh, this Pokemon's good for Parafusion, which is Paralysis and Fusion. So, you know, you really can do a lot of damage when you are inflicting multiple status effect changes. So annoyers kind of do, rather than inflict a status change, they prevent Pokemon from acting. So they might use something like Attract, which will be like, oh, the Pokemon got attracted to you, which is a little bit heteronormative, but whatever. Swagger also can, confuse the Pokemon. So
Swag usually does confuse me, so I could see how that would work.
So Togekiss is a really popular annoyer, and this is the evolved form of Togepi.
Can I start calling you Togekiss because annoyer?
You're mean.
Rude. Togekiss is very popular, so...
So we can't call you that.
And Togekiss attract Pokemon, so just saying. One that I've historically used, I know that it's maybe not considered the strongest, but I liked to use Lantern, electric and water type, as a crippler. I've used it like with Thunder Wave and Confusion, so that's been popular. And I'm not really too sure if it's super popular in terms of like the high-level competitive battles, but Miss Magius has some really good moves for being a crippler.
That's great.
And kind of, so on the last note, kind of related to cripplers and annoyers, and in a way, they can kind of be considered a subclass of what we call support Pokemon. So support Pokemon is like, if you think of almost like a bard in Dungeons and Dragons, you're wanting to do things like that will help, typically like helpful status effects for your team.
And so, bolster their abilities.
Exactly. So a really popular one that you see a lot, and there's in the competitive metagame, there's actually limits on how many, like, you know, community agreed limits on how many Pokemon can do this. Swords Dance, which increases your
attack by 2 stages.
Thank you. I was trying to remember how many stages it was. So it increases your attack by 2 stages, and then Baton Pass switches over to another Pokemon, so it'll keep that status change in effect. Some really popular Baton Passers that I've seen in discussion are Blaziken, Ninjask, and Gliscor.
Excellent.
And like I said,
that's
these
awesome.
These are all up for debate. Like I said, I am not involved in these metagame discussions. I just kind of investigate them from the outside. So I'm sure that there are people who will could endlessly debate why any of the recommendations I gave are, not valid or whatever. But
I typically, when I'm playing Pokemon, use whatever I think is cute or whatever I have like an attachment to for when I caught them. But using the guidance that you just gave, I mean, I think I'm going to follow some of these examples and see how that works.
And the thing is that like that's a perfect point to kind of transition to, because like I was saying at the beginning of the discussion, you don't have to use these different battle roles in order to enjoy the game at all. Like if your main goal is just to beat the gyms in Elite Four and catch them all, like really just having a good balance of types is really all you need. But I mean you could really have like all the legendary, like I remember I used to play Yellow with like the 3 legendary birds. That's 3 flying types on the team. So I mean, it's like really just about like how you enjoy the game, but some people really enjoy getting into this, you know, real metagaming level of it.
I mean, some people will also just pick a single Pokemon and play the game from start to end using that single Pokemon.
Yeah. And so what my goal today was is kind of give you a starting point to think about how you could play the Pokemon strengths and how different moves interact. So like I said, you can pick a Pokemon that you like and you think is cute, but you might consider like, oh, you know, this Pokemon's attack stat isn't the best, so maybe I'll try giving it some, you know, different moves. Maybe it would make a good wall or whatever, you know. So, you know, kind of just, I hope that I've inspired you to think of, you know, the different things that your Pokemon can do. And
awesome.
You know, teams are really about, like, when you get further the team building, it's, there's all sorts of different strategies based on, like, one core move, you know, but if you're just looking for, like, kind of a nice mix of different Pokés who can do a pretty versatile team, I guess, you know, what I'm trying to say is, if you have, like, a physical wall and a special wall, and a physical sweeper and a special sweeper, a lead, and then a crippler or annoyer, and it doesn't mean that every move that, you know, these Pokemon have, you can still give them some offensive moves if you want, but if you kind of approach it that way, you should have a pretty sturdy team of, you know, Pokemon that can do some fun things. So I know that probably seems like a lot to take in, and if you're feeling really overwhelmed, but you really want to try investigating this, or you know, just try looking at some teams that are competitive, there's a really cool tool called Tommy's Team Builder, which we'll link to you over at stabcast.org. And I can't vouch for the viability of every team, because it can generate a random team for you.
Yeah, but I think that's really cool. It can, you know, generate a random team, and then from there you could, you know, tweak it now that you've seen sort of the theory in action.
And it'll tell you, like, what items to attach, and, like, what EVs and stuff. So, like, that's really, I'm sorry, IVs. No, EVs. I keep getting them mixed up. If you're, like, really just kind of newer to the mainline Pokemon games, if you're someone who's coming in from Go, there's some really good team builders, in the sense of it'll show you what your type weaknesses are. Azuriland is my favorite one to go to if I need to check, like, any gaps, you know, that I haven't covered for, you know, defending my team or whatever. So there's a lot of them out there, but we'll link you to that over on Stabcast. And another cool tool is I use one over at scipokes.com. You're able to search for Pokemon with certain moves. So, like, you can look for Pokemon that have, like, Swords Dance and Baton Pass, or Attract, and you know, other moves. And you can do this for, like, multiple moves. If you, like, I want a Pokemon that can have these three or four moves, like, it'll list all the possible Pokemon that you can have. So that's kind of if you're looking to just look at certain elements. But if you're like, wow, this really, like, makes a lot of sense to me, and I already kind of understand the way that it works on a competitive level, Smogon.com is pretty much the definitive site for Pokemon metagaming. Their Dex has competitive move sets, and, you know, they'll tell you, like, what items, what EVs, and they've really kind of built up, you know, the metagame into different tiers of Pokemon to, not tiers of Pokemon like the ones at the end of the first movie, but like competitive tiers. So this is kind of as a way to level the playing field. And again, it's, you know, not an official competition thing. Although you do have situations where official competitions will have, like, ban lists or whatever. But, you know, this is just more to kind of like a community agreed upon rules. So there's different tiers that start with the Uber tier. And the Uber tier, apparently Mega Rayquaza is just too good to be fair. So, like, if you're, like, Uber tier actually is the least restrictive, because it'll have, like, a lot of, like, really powerful legendary Pokemon. And then as you go down the tiers, so it goes Uber, overused, underused, rarely used, and never used. And this isn't necessarily in terms of, like, the most powerful to the least powerful. It's just about how frequently you tend to see the Pokemon in competitive play in the metagame. So there's also borderline tiers in between. And this is something that definitely during a generation will evolve. You know, in past generations, it pretty much is set in stone. But as the community analyzes kind of strategies and viability of certain Pokemon, they may move between tiers during the generation, or you might find a Pokemon that one generation was not viable, but then in a new game, it might learn different moves. Or, like, you know, in the current generation, we had a bunch of Pokemon change to fairy type, so that definitely influenced the strategy and, you know, type matchup for a lot of them. So I'm going to be really interested to see how this comes into play with, like, our Alolan forms, like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because, like, even saying something like Meowth having the move Bite be Stab now, you know, that it'll be really interesting to see certain Pokemon maybe become more viable. So, again, this is something that's very, like, it's very in-depth. There's, like lots of discussion about, you know, this Pokemon is viable, this one's not. But bottom line, you should really play what you enjoy.
Excellent. And I'm sorry, I know you mentioned this. What is the best, what is that site again?
So if you're really serious about the metagaming and the different tiers and looking at really competitive movesets, that's Smogon.com.
Excellent.
And there, it's like a, just a really good, even if you don't really care about the, you know, different tiers or whatever, it's a pretty good way to see, like, you can look at the, like, all the Pokemon that are flying type and see their base stats compared and stuff. So, I mean, it's a good way to look at, you know, different things that are available.
Awesome. That's fantastic. And, of course, we'll link our listeners to that over on Stabcast.org.
Stabcast.org.
And I believe you had one more thing you wanted to ask?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to know, and this kind of ties into our link kibbles that we'll get to at the end of the show and just a little bit here. I was curious if the two of you have any go-to Pokemon that, whether it's like at a really competitive level or not, just that when you're like building a team that you're like, oh, I really like, you know, want to include this one for a specific reason.
So I, like I said, you know, I typically just build teams around the Pokies I like. I am interested now in proper team building, but, you know, I typically am like, you know, when can I get my Articuno? When can I get my Pikachu? When can I get my, like, Butterfree or Pidgeotto right. or whatever?
Are there certain types that you find are, like,
I like ice a lot.
Mmm, interesting.
What about you, Sulker?
I like to build balanced teams. It'll kind of be a mixture of Pokemon that I really like. My most recent team, minding that I haven't really played a full game in a while, was, Ursaring with, 6 IVs, a Arcanine, because I always have Arcanine.
Yes!
A Ninjask, so that I could get that, speed boost, and then Baton Pass, so that power up a, any slow types. I'm really a fan of Leafeon, because it's just Sword Dance plus Leaf Blade makes me a happy camper. So yeah, I like to keep a mixed variety. It seems that I tend to go for physical over special attacks. But I think we should probably look in the future to seeing, like, what kind of teams we can each build.
I think yeah. that's a good idea.
Me too.
So, yeah, I have, like, you know, my strategy has kind of been, like, there are certain Pokemon that I'm like, oh, I really want that one. Like, for example, in Gold and Silver, I really liked Houndour and Houndoom. And so they were Fire and Dark. So I was like, okay, I've got those two types covered.
Puppy play.
You know, so then I'm going to look at, like, what other types I can cover. I'd like to try to have, you know, 12 different types on a 6 Pokemon team. If I had to...
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, if you have each Pokemon has two types, you know, that you can have 12 different types covered. So that's what
see how that works. It's just like, whoa.
I mean, that's my ideal. I have to say that probably one of my favorites, and it's actually there are two because they both share this typing. It's Spiritomb and Sableye, and I have to go with Mega Sableye because Mega Sableye is a little bit more competitive stat-wise when on the level of Spiritomb. They're two of my favorites because, first of all, I love ghost Pokemon in general, but they're ghost dark, so that means that they're immune to normal fighting and psychic, and up until Fairy was introduced, they took only one damage from everything, so nothing was like, you know, two times super effective. They just took normal damage because of all the resistances, and so that's probably one of the reasons why they, you know, brought Fairy into the mix, because, you know, there were certain types that were just too powerful. So, I mean, but that said, you know, only taking, you know, 2x damage rather than a 4x damage, that means it has, like, one of the best, in my opinion, you know, type matchups possible. And, you know, they're not exactly walls, but their defense is pretty good. But what I really like is that they just learn a lot of cool moves, especially Spiritomb. I think Spiritomb is probably a little bit has the advantage here, but in their attacks maybe aren't, like, the best stats. So, I mean, it's maybe not, like, the most powerful Pokemon you can get, but from what I know, their special and their attack are pretty even, so you could go either way for physical or special moves. And, you know, there's some pretty good stab moves that they can learn, but then they are really good at being annoyers, I found. Like, you can learn Toxic, you can learn Taunt, Sunny Day, Will-O-Wisp, Swagger, Substitute, Confuse Ray. So, I mean, there are a lot of things that you could do with a Spiritomb or a Mega Sableye that can really, you know, it can serve a lot of purposes. So maybe even have a entire team of them, but, you know, probably not a good idea. But I'm really hoping that there's some way to get one of the two in Sun and Moon, because I'd really love to, you know, have one on my team again.
Awesome. All right. Well, that about wraps it up for today.
Yeah. So
I think in future episodes, we will be looking at some follow-ups to this topic. You know, once you're really comfortable with the idea of these various roles, going into, you know, some of the more specialized stuff that Slykick was talking about there toward the end, about, you know, what specific Pokemon are good and for what reasons, and, you know, really start to get into advanced team building. I myself am going to have to start doing team building 101 like today. Do you have anything else to wrap that up?
No, just hope, like I said, I hope that it piqued your interest or piqued your interest out there in Radioland.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. This week, I'm going to be handling the anime episode discussion. I'm going to take this pretty quick here. We are running a little over length tonight. We had a catastrophic computer error.
Think mid-episode. To Bill's PC, yeah.
So hopefully we're going to wrap this up without another issue popping up.
I blame a Porygon.
Yeah, seriously. So we're talking about XY episodes 5 through 8. That is episode 5, A Blustery Santaloon Gym Battle. Episode 6, Battling on Thin Ice. Episode 7, Giving Chase at the Rhyhorn Race. And episode 8, Grooming Furfru. I'm going to go over these episode descriptions very briefly, then I'm going to call out my highlights, and then if anyone else has any dissenting opinions or things that they'd specifically like to call out, that'll be your time to do so. In A Blustery Santaloon Gym Battle, we have Ash and his friends finally meeting up with Alexa in Santaloon City, where she introduces Ash to her sister, the gym leader, Viola. Ash has his first gym battle at the Kalos region, but he's defeated when Viola's bug-type Pokemon put up a good fight. Afterwards, an old friend reunites with Ash. Battling on Thin Ice has Ash challenging Viola to a rematch. He is now ready for Surskit's Battleground Freezing strategy. In Giving Chase at the Rhyhorn Race, which, by the by, is a fantastic rhyme, Ash is introduced to the world of Rhyhorn racing. Serena, whose mother is a famous Rhyhorn racer, coaches Ash in the upcoming race. Meanwhile, Team Rocket has their sights on capturing Pikachu and the racing Rhyhorn. Finally, in Grooming Furfru, in the next town, the guidebook reveals that it is home to Charisma Trimmers. Charisma Trimmers are people whose expertise is styling the Pokemon Furfru. Jessica is a Charisma Trimmer in training. Jessica is having problems with her confidence, which is only exacerbated by the expert Charisma Trimmer, Musali. Musali is not who she appears to be. So the first thing I really have to talk about, you know, of course, episodes 5 and 6, they are very clearly a part 1 and a part 2. We have, you know, Viola's bug-type Pokemon team doing a lot of status effect, a lot of, like, environment-changing effects, and really watching Ash sort of have to work through these mentally and work with his Pokemon on really overcoming things like, you know, Slykick had mentioned earlier, turning the arena into like an icy freeze pit. You know, there's a really cool bit with like spider webs all over the ceiling that the bug types use gust in order to blow the Ash's Pokemon into the spider webs. And all of this is going on with some of the best combat animation that I've seen in the entire Pokemon series to date.
Episodes
were gorgeous. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've seen a lot of people on the internet recently talking about a clip from last week's Japanese episode of X, Y, and Z, where, you know, there's a really great battle with Ash's Greninja that is like straight up like watching an episode of the Naruto anime. And this is really, to me, like, wow, this is already that level, and that's like 100 episodes away. So, you know, I've been really excited. I was really stoked to watch these episodes. It's been really cool, you know, as someone who's watched Pokemon from the beginning, to see Ash finally really becoming like a competent trainer has for me been a real high point.
Yeah, and you can see that in the first two episodes listed here. Like Ash walks into that gym match thinking, oh, I've got this, I know how to battle. All right, Pikachu, go destroy these. Wait, what? Why is this strategy not working? So I think that you see Ash like learning that the Kalos region has a lot of different battle types to offer him. And as you said, with the ice arena, it really throws Ash and team for a loop. Watching his training montage in the second episode against Alexa's Pokemon, and even his team just coming and helping him out, like through the various various training methods they put them through. It gives it a nice feel, very friendly, very cooperative.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, like, historically, I've always liked the episodes that have been about gym battles the best. And, you know, this just combined with, you know, I feel XY being one of the strongest seasons to date. Like you said, the battles are really great to watch. And something that I appreciate about Ash is that he's not like, oh, even though this is like 20 seasons down the line or whatever, that he's not just like one-shotting everything, that he's still, I mean, somehow he is still 10 years old, but he's traveled through like every region. Like, I don't want to even try to figure that out, but
fever dream.
Right. You know, but like that said, I really appreciate that. Like, he's still being put to the test. So
repeat to yourself, it's just a show. You should really just relax. No takers? Come on. All right. Well, in giving chase at the Rhyhorn race, I thought the nice point here, first, you know, it was, of course, nice to see Team Rocket back after a couple of episodes with no Team Rocket. I thought this was a really great episode in terms of its writing and its humor. It used some really funny, like, typical anime, like, visual motifs for comedy, which I thought was great. I just overall had a lot of fun with this episode. I thought it was really, really funny.
My I can't even handle Ash moment this week was could not get on the Rhyhorn. She like told you, put your foot here, step up here. Thanks, Serena. We can figure out how to get on the horse, or in this case, the Rhyhorn.
Well, he's Ash. Would he really?
No, not at all. So him throwing himself seven different ways to Tuesday didn't really seem to help him out much, but Serena's careful coaching and in repeating of be one with Rhyhorn, be one with Rhyhorn, really sold it to Ash. And so, you know, I feel like that taught him on how to connect deeper with Pokemon.
I mean, I have to say, I don't know if it's just that it's better localization, but it seems like it's almost a little more tongue-in-cheek that, like, Ash is kind of, he's not a loser, but I mean,
he's doofy.
Like, I mean, and I feel like originally he was kind of presented as like, oh, he's supposed to be like the, like, Pokemon hero, but like, he's kind of a dork. And like, you know, there's a little bit of delight in being like, really, Ash?
Like, brah, have you watched the first, like, 100 seasons of this show? Like, he is the doof king.
I know, like, I feel
you could,
like,
call him the Bidoof king.
I feel like that particularly XY is kind of, like, embracing that and being like, oh, it's just, it's Ash being Ash, you know? But then again, you know, really, like you said, Spike, really showing that he has become a competent battler and, you know, that his bond with his Pokemon really is his strength, so.
And in the last episode, grooming Furfru, my highlight was that it eventually ended.
Now, see, I have to disagree with you here on this episode, because I know you weren't a particular fan of it. Every time,
wow, are you saying that all of these Furfru are still Furfru, but they look different?
Okay, with the whole Ash is not able to recognize that different Pokemon have different forms. I mean, okay, look, rewind for a second. He has, at this point in the series, recognized that all Jennies and all Joys are related, but he can't see two Furfrus and, okay, I'm not gonna go into it, but the point is, I think that it's a good episode. Like, with Ash's doofiness aside, like, you get a good look at a new trainer, a new highlight Pokemon, and yeah, you get to look at one that now I want to go back to the game and be like, oh, I guess I'm gonna play with the Furfru styling mechanic, because why not? It was cool in that one episode. And
agreed.
And you get to see Jesse and James dress up in high fashion again.
Jisali
is
like
everything. And Wobbuffet, don't even get me started on how cute Wobbuffet is in this episode. And you get a really great combat scene with Ash and Pikachu. Pikachu is blind and fighting just based on what Ash tells him to do. Like, that trust, that bond is perfection.
All right, I stand corrected. You're making Pikachu out to sound like some kind of blind Kenshi fighter. Like, how can I compete with that?
Something I appreciate for these these two episodes is that, you know, the Rhyhorn racing, you know, we didn't see it in X and Y, but, you know, the racing Rhyhorn is in your front yard. And, you know, the Furfrus are in Lumio City. So I just, it's cute to be like, oh, yeah, that's from the games. I mean, like, I really appreciate that. Even though these two maybe were kind of filler-ish compared to the gym episodes, it's not just like Ash meets a random person in a random town that's not even in the games. Here's a random Pokemon that this focuses on, and Ash never sees that person again.
Indeed. All right, so of course, want to move on to the next segment here, where we talk about the current goings-on of the Pokemon trading card game. This month, we have a couple of new releases. The first, of course, is the Arceus Mythic Pokemon Pack. This comes with the Arceus foil card for Arceus EX. It comes with a couple of packs of Pokemon Generations expansion, which you can only get in these packs still. You know, so that's obviously really exciting. I like the Generations packs quite a bit. Solcry, I believe that you picked this up, but I believe you also picked up the other big release this month, and that is, of course, the Steam Siege expansion. The Steam Siege expansion, it's themed around, you know, Volcanion and Magnera. You know, very cool. Lots of focus on fire and mechanics and what have you. I know that you've also bought some of those. What do you think?
So I'm a big fan of the Arceus card. The packs that I got that came with it all had really cool Pokemon, a couple of support cards, the general things you expect when you're opening up a TCG card pack. I also really enjoy the Arceus pin. I was contemplating it, putting it on my Pokemon Go bag, but I think it's too cute to potentially lose while adventuring in the real world. I have not yet played with the Hoopa deck that I bought today, but the Volcanion deck is fire. Like, using it in some practice battles, if you get a Volcanion out and you get 3 energy on it, just expect to win, because, like, really, unless you got a good
It's over!
Oh, I guess it's over. I heard a voice say it's over.
No, I mean if you get 3 energy onto Volcanion.
Oh, yes. So I highly recommend that if you are into the card game, go ahead and check out these packs. They're really cool. They've got some great usage. The only thing that I'm currently having an issue with is there is a known glitch in the online version of the game. So if you register your decks, you'll find that the Ninja Boy card is currently not available for use. It's been suspended pending a fix. There's apparently some sort of glitch in the system that messes it up and messes up other cards.
He was a ninja boy. He said, "See you later, boy."
And it's important to realize, or recognize, I should say, that the Ninja Boy card suspension is not a physical ban. It does not impact physical tournament play. It is just due to a glitch in the TCG Online implementation.
Well, given how its UI looks, I'm not shocked.
Ice cold. Any other thoughts on recent card releases?
No, I think that covers it for this week.
Fantastic. Then, speaking of the week, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Pokemon of the week?
Well, all right, since you ask, Meowth, number 52, Scratch Cat Pokemon.
Ooh, I'm having Scratch Cat fever.
Scratch Cat Pokemon. Original Pokedex entry, adores circular objects, wanders the streets on nightly basis to look for dropped loose change.
Me too.
Originally found in Pokemon Blue and Green on routes 5 through 8, it is one of the few Pokemon in to use the attack Payday, which generates in-game currency. It also appears in many side games, such as Pokemon Snap on the beach level, which is the first level of the game, where it will make silly Meowth faces at you.
Aww.
Notably has appeared in almost every episode of the anime to date, starting with episode 2, Pokemon Emergency. The anime Meowth is a sassy member of Team Rocket and is one of the few Pokemon able to speak human and Pokemon languages alike. He has gained this ability to impress a female Meowth who rejected him for being a talking freak.
Well, she dumb.
It's true, though. There was a follow-up episode where he went back to, like, save her because she got kicked out of her human's house, and then she's like, "Oh no, I like this Persian instead." Whatever. In Pokemon Sun and Moon, as previously discussed, there will be an Alola form Meowth that is gray and fabulously fierce. So that's what we have for this week's Pokemon of the Week. We'll be getting a little bit more feedback on that in our link cables, which is coming up right Meowth.
Well done. So let's start with that. We have our Pokemon of the Week is the perfect partner Meowth. What are your thoughts on this sassy kitty? So your enzyme says, "I wasn't much of a Meowth fan until I saw the new one from Sun Moon. I may actually play the new game Meow. So now the Meow was just was me saying it by accident. And Gaknar on Twitter was saying the original Meowth, the first, just showed up to the party. And then the new Meowth, the second, is lit AF after party, ready to steal your Taco Bell and your man.
Lol.
So that's me. And moving on to our question of the week for our discussion, we said this week we're giving an intro to team building. Do you have any strategies or go-to Pokemon that you consider when putting a team together? So your Enzyme has the trainer's bike approach. Whatever is cutest, my teams have to be adorable.
Yes, team
cute. I know Trixie Mattel, the well-known drag queen, does that with a fairy-type Pokemon. Prince Zexu said hazard removers and setters, core and support mons. And Kanji Likes Boys says, start with a tank, add three more tanks. All right, then. Like those sturdy Pokemon. And over on Facebook, we have Adolfo R., also known as Dark Shifter, I believe, saying, strategy? I usually use Pokemon that I like or think would be fun to use, though I try to make sure that I have coverage against potential competition. I will say Chansey with Eviolite is a mainstay in any team I create, which you were alluding to earlier, Trainer Salkler. So I take it you've had some battle experience against this Eviolite Chansey?
I mean, given the previous statements I made, you could infer that. But no, I have. Yes, I have.
And what has your experience been like battling against this Chansey? Just frustrating as hell?
No comment.
Oh, all right. Just wrapping up with a few more tweets. Garth the Wolf, talking about last week's Pokemon of the Week, says, these replies make me sad. Mewtwo is my favorite Pokemon because of the story of how his character came to be. Watch the origin of Mewtwo and tell me you don't get the slightest bit emotional. He's a great Pokemon, powerful or not. Agreed. I've always liked Mewtwo quite a bit. Your Enzyme said, specifically targeting you, Spike, you don't need to say WWW, and links a clip from the cult classic Home Movies.
Rude and hateful.
Also has a amazing gif of it's called How Pokemon Go Spawns Their Commons, and it is a bunch of Ekans, Zubats, Rattatas, and Pidgeys being dumped out of planes. It's like amazing.
Okay, actually, that is pretty hilarious.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I was dubious when you were describing it, but it actually looks quite good.
Like, I can't stop watching it.
Well, you need to wrap this up.
Also, I'm also linking us to the world's first Pokemon Go statue. There's a village in Vindenes, Norway, which I'm probably saying wrong. Vindenes kind of sounds like a Dedenne evolution or something. They made a Pokemon statue. They want a Pokestop in their village. I think that's really cute.
Yeah, that's adorable. Even if the actual statue isn't exactly.
And your Enzyme, again, coming up with another happy story, saying, I love stories like this. Happy endings for all. And it's a story about Pokemon Go saves a struggling Washington ice cream shop.
You know, at this point, I'm just going to have to say that your Enzyme is definitely our number one super fan. Can we make him super fan status for this show?
I think that's fair.
Sounds good to me.
Showing an update from Pokemon Go in the App Store saying no text fixes.
LOL.
And that does it for our link cable. So if you would like to link cable with us, you can give us feedback on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or Google Play. We love your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter. You can email us at mail@stabcast.org. And if you want to check out all of the episodes so far, our home base is stabcast.org. We've got links to any news we talk about and any pertinent resources that we talk about on air. So stabcast.org is the home of the Same Type Attack Bonus podcast, the podcast you are listening to. And speaking of podcasts to listen to, Spike, what are some other podcasts to listen to?
All right, of course I want to throw some attention over in the direction of our good friends over at the Voice of Geeks Network. That's vognetwork.com. Oh wait, I'm sorry, should I say www.vognetwork.com?
Wait, does that mean World Wide Web?
It means http://www.vognetwork.com. www.vognetwork.com. You should check out our friends over at the Pokestop podcast. Join podcasting veterans Rob Roberts and Shane Alenko for a regular chat on Pokemon topics like the handheld games, Pokemon Go, and spin-offs of the franchise.
Yeah, Rob is kind of like the Professor Oak of the podcasting world. He's old.
Oh! We are too young of a show for you to be firing shots like that.
Oh, when you get them off, you get them off.
Oh, I'm already knowing that Rob's going to be bringing read after read on Reading is Fundamental.
Yeah, you go get burned, girl. Let's see. We also have the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
Your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. That's where Slagkick and I talk about left of center games, stuff that maybe isn't on other people's radar. We have a lot of fun over there. You should check
it
out.
Wait, you mean we have more than one podcast?
Right.
Who does that?
I also want to point in the direction of the Ranger Pride podcast, where myself and Shane Alenko talk about the current season of the Power Rangers meta series, as well as the current season of the Super Sentai series, upon which it's based in Japan.
Hono Kakase!
Yes! Slaggy, what about you?
Wait, how many podcasts are you on?
Like five?
Including Reading is Fundamental. This is the show where myself, Spike, Rob Roberts, and our buddy Delvin from the Video Game Realness podcast talk about the whatever season is currently airing of RuPaul's Drag Race. So we'll be talking about All-Stars 2. If you have no idea what RuPaul's Drag Race is, think about it as like Pokemon contests, but remember the multiple episodes where James cross-dresses. You know, that's kind of what you're looking at. And I'd be remiss not to mention OLR, where every gamer has a voice. That's Orange Lounge Radio, the longest running video game podcast on the internet.
It's super effective. PKMN Cast, a Pokemon website for news and reviews that explores the in and outs of the Pokemon franchise, covering the games, anime, and beyond. All this and a weekly podcast, Dungeons and Dragonites, taking two of the best aspects of geek life. GM Whitewing hosts a troop of unlikely heroes as they explore the Pokemon world of the past with classic D&D classes and villains.
Slaggy, do you want to tell people about our music?
Our music's great. It is Professor Sycamore's theme. It is a cover done by the amazing Nathan Sharp, aka Nate Wants to Battle, over on YouTube. Does some of the best anime covers that I have ever heard. Lots of fun anime and game parodies, and of course, video game covers, such as our theme.
Okay, I'm sorry when you were like, our music's great. I honestly thought that's all you were gonna say, and it wrecked me. I think that this is it for everyone tonight. Thank you so much, all of our lovely and beautiful listeners out there in internet radio land. I know you have a lot of shows that you could listen to spend your time. I really appreciate that you've spent this evening with us. I hope you've had half as much fun listening as we've had talking. It's been a real pleasure. Until next time, we are signing off, but keep catching, keep fighting, and
Kyojo Kessen.
We do have a lot in common. The same air, the same earth, the same sky. Maybe if we started looking at what's the same instead of always looking at what's different, well, who knows?
Develop amnesia conveniently and forget everything you heard.
Mics are hot.
It's super effective.
Volcanion is also hot.
Take two, mics are hot.
Meows, that's right. Where we serve tea and dish on everything RuPaul's Drag Race, hunty. This is a show where myself, Spike, Rob Roberts, and Shane from...
Take two, hot mics.
Okay, ready?
That's what mics are hot means.